battle's scarred and getting long in the tooth. Desperate and hungry and got nothing to lose. Yeah, I'm alone. I've been chased, I've been bit. Yeah, I'm a lone wolf. They like to shoot at me, but they never been trapped, and I have the people, the things that got me cornered at last. I've been hunting, I've been tracking, I've been running since I was. Born in a Louisiana swamp, moved with the pack to Tennessee. Raised by black and white dogs to some country, some rock and roll. They said, now boy, you gonna have to quit your howling soul. Staying up all night and chasing lassies by the moon.
White Area and Resistance calling. White Area and Resistance calling. This is Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in north central Indiana. And it is November the 29th. We're coming down to the end, man. If you got something to do, it's important. You better get it done if you want to do it in November, because this date will never come around again. That's right. That's right. Now you can send all your money to P.O. Box 401 so I can go skiing in the Alps and gambling on the Mississippi, things like that. Oh no, that's not me, that's Plastic Man. But we do need a few bucks to keep moving here and send out some money to our favorite prisoners too, POWs. In fact, I got a letter to read you, give you a little idea how they treat white prisoners or any other prisoners. Dear Tom, hope this letter finds you and Mary in good health and in happy spirits and in fairly good prosperity. Yeah. I want to thank you for your generous gift to my commissary fund. I was expecting only $15, which is still very much needed and appreciated. Your $25 was a great blessing. The Regional Bureau of Prisons, or the Hazleton Complex Warden, took away our mail room about a month ago and moved it a half mile away to the main warehouse by the Hazleton Max Security U.S. Penitentiary. We have no mailroom officers to complain to about our mail problems that we may have. This has to be the first in the history of the Bureau of Prisons that a major prison facility doesn't have a mailroom. This could be because of economics or a lack of staff. No, they needed to fight aggressive warfare in the Middle East. They don't have any money for prison. They got to buy bombs. This FCI is 15% to 20% understaffed. My personal mail letters have decreased at least 40 to 50% in the past 6 weeks to 8 weeks. It could be because so many are distracted from the federal circus election, or that the coming holidays are consuming folks' minds and time. Also, I don't discount the possibility that the famous but incompetent agents may be visiting family, and what a few friends I have left. Tom, I assure you, the bastards have not gotten me, even though I've been down for 7 years. Matt Hale has been behind the wire for at least 15 years. I'm not sure right now if he's been behind the wire that long or not. But I do know it's been too long, and I feel bad for his mother that keeps working to try to get him out and writes all kinds of letters and encourages people to write letters to judges and all that. I hate to be the bringer of cynical news, but like I've said before, they don't give a damn about you once they got you in there. You know, writing judges and people, politicians, it doesn't do any good. In fact, I think they get a kick out of it, the suffering. They're sort of, you don't realize how many of these guys are not only pedophiles, but psychos that run these prisons and so forth. Oh, by the way, it's a good possibility, according to my case manager, that after my unit team meeting in 3 to 4 months, I may get transferred back to my blank blank region. This means possible transfer to blank blank or blank blank or blank blank or blank blank or a very slim possibility of blank blank. Imagine if I get transferred to Terre Haute, Indiana. Matt Hale and I could eat in the chow hall if he ever gets out of the hole. And blank blank is very close to you. Yeah, I could come visit you. Some great men have been imprisoned at Terre Haute. David Lane, Tim McVeigh, to name just two. Well, let me know what your predictions are for what Trump will do in his first 6 months. I think he'll be just bullshitting like he's been all along bullshitting. That's what he's going to do. He'll throw us a bone now and then just to keep the right wing thinking they got a superhero. I place high value on your intelligent foresight. The only news program we get in our unit that the inmates want to watch is CNN. Blah. I still believe Trump may be a Trojan horse of the Jews. Well, you could be very close. He's always been surrounded by Jews all his life. I mean, in the family and everything. So I think the Jews have some influence on him. I could be wrong, he says. Trump just mentioned he wants Negro CEO of the Black Entertainment Television for a cabinet choice. Feel free to call, well, blank blank, your loyal friend and comrade. Well, there you go. He seems to be in fairly decent spirits. Well, I'm waiting to see Trump promote putting these private prisons back online that are just to make money for a certain amount of upper-class people. Yeah, and if he does that, you'll know exactly where he's coming from. Prisons for profit, yeah. And this playing around with this Romney is enough to gag a maggot. Romney is a first-class son of a bitch. And no friend of the working man, I'll tell you that. But Trump's playing around. I think he may be stringing him out and not going to choose him at all just to make him suffer. That I would understand after all the bullshit he came up with. Well, he's got over 4,000 jobs to fill to get ready to be president. We're bound to get maybe a couple of good guys in there, but I'm sure most of them will be bad news. It's quite amusing about the bright right wings crying their eyes out about how the left is going to do everything they can to block everything that Trump comes up with. Well, they seem to forget when Obama won how they the Republicans swore he'd never get absolutely anything through. Now, I'm no fan of having a black president, but sounds like the pan's calling the pot black. Because remember when they came out with that? There was a bunch of those congressmen. I guess it was the Tea Party or something. He'll never get anything through us. Well, now it's on the other foot. Now the left wing's going to sabotage as much as possible. So, you know, it's amusing how the right and left go back and forth at each other. I'm glad I'm in neither one. Let them fight it out. Actually, both sides are a bunch of pussies. I mean, if they ever were challenged on a street corner, they'd run like hell. You know, people out there that are sort of conservative ought to recognize what's going on. The Republican Party keeps saying, well, we don't mind if they come in here from all over the world as long as they integrate into our society. In other words, pretend to be white. Well, the other side just says, come on in and mix. The Republicans say, come on in and integrate and mix. So both of them are integrationists, equalitarianists, and all that kind of stuff. Republicans are just as bad. In fact, they're worse because a lot of them know better. Well, I see they've almost got that Aleppo over there in Iraq, or was it Syria, conquered so for the 15th time and probably the 40th time in history. Wonder, just imagine how much that costs just to recapture one city. You know, those bombs, you know, they cost tens of thousands of dollars a piece. And all those rockets and stuff. They spend money like a drunken sailor. But they got no money for a mailroom in a federal prison. Yep. One thing good is with our chaos factor is that we know that most of what Trump promised during the elections is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They're not going to be a wall. They might add 50 feet onto it. I mean, sideways, not tall. And like that. But all the stuff that he's going to do, is he going to do to keep these Islamists out? How do you like that Somalian? Those are the blackest Negroes in Africa, I think. Knifing people. Well, that's a pretty easy thing to do. I think this guy had a machete that attacked these people the other day. Machetes are terrific war weapons. In revolutions around the world where they can't afford guns, they use machetes. And we drop bombs on them and they cut us up with machetes. Interesting. They brought these Somalians in here by the tens of thousands. They have whole apartment buildings in San Diego full of them. Even here in Fort Wayne, Indiana, only 50 miles away from me, they have hundreds, maybe thousands over there. I forget how many. I think it was thousands that they dropped them into Fort Wayne. That's an interesting way to commit genocide against the white race. Yeah. But who cares, right? Who cares? Well, we care, but there's not too much we can do about it right at the moment. Until chaos becomes more chaotic. Well, if at all possible, I'm going to try to get up to the burial spot of Robert Matthews this next year. And also my wife's burial spot. Her ashes are right there with Bob Matthews. And we'll see what happens. It's a long way up there, but I think we'll make it. Probably the easiest way is to fly to Spokane and then by car go up to the ranch. Well, the right and left wing got something to yell about now, about Fidel Castro. One side, how wonderful he was. and the other side how horrible he was. I remember watching on black and white TV when he took over, and he took all his opponents he could get a hold of, especially in the military, into the big soccer stadium and shot them all. That was on live TV. People forget about all that stuff. Well, I guess that's the way to do it. When you get the power and you take over, you do to them what they have done to you. So anyhow, but they're making a big deal out of it. And then all these spoiled Cubans down in Miami that took off, they're an interesting bunch because they've obviously become Americanized to the point of possibly nauseism, but I wouldn't get excited about either side on this fight. In fact, Raul, his brother, is the one who did most of the killing. He was in charge of the concentration camps and all that stuff, so the worst of the Castro brothers is still in power. But gradually they'll figure a way of getting them out of there, and then the capitalists can take back over Cuba and run it like when Batista was running it. And they'll just take the same concentration camps and change the people inside them. So I wouldn't get too excited over the Castro situation one way or the other. Well, where are we at here? Incidentally, one of our friends contacted me and said that some guy approached him and said that Tom Metzger is thrown into the towel and is quitting and all that kind of stuff. And he didn't seem to have the guy's name, but that goes on a lot, you know, especially inside the prisons. Those skinheads that are mostly into drugs and everything else will tell somebody I know things about me that are impossible, never happened, but they spread all kinds of crazy stuff. But this one, and I'm sure the right wing out there spread a lot of stuff about old terrible Tommy, but I'm here at my post. I'm going to stay here as long as possible, okay? Well, I see this Representative Keith Ellison, the Islamic guy, a Minnesota politician, which is enough to gag a maggot there, too. A decade ago, he became the first Muslim ever elected to Congress. Now he's running for the chairmanship of the Democratic National Committee, and he'll get it. That would make him the first Muslim to win a position in America's national political leadership. Ellison, 53, says he'd prefer to be thought of as a politician who is a Muslim rather than a Muslim politician. In today's America, though, there are certain things you can't escape or wish away. Carrying the baggage of Muslim identity in post-9/11, America is one of them. He looks like just a regular Negroid to me. Nothing would separate him from the masses of North Africa. But they're so interested in having people with dark skin at the top and those with white skin losing ground, I guess it's going to be this way for a long time. Well, a federal judge on Monday granted Dylan S. Roof's request to represent himself in his hate crimes trial on charges of killing 9 African-American parishioners at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, raising the possibility that the avowed white supremacist could cross-examine survivors and family members of the deceased. Of course you have that right to do that, no matter what you don't like about it, people.
Ability that the avowed white supremacist could cross-examine survivors and family members of the deceased. Death penalty experts predicted that Mr. Roof's trial, a deeply somber matter in a city still recovering from the massacre, would now take on elements of farce and reveal less than some hoped about the psychological origins of Mr. Roof's alleged rampage. By controlling his case, they said, Mr. Roof may decline to present evidence of his mental instability that his highly regarded defense team might have emphasized in both the guilt and penalty phases. Federal prosecutors are seeking to send Mr. Roof to death row, having rejected his offer to plead guilty to 33 charges in exchange for a life sentence. Jury selection in Mr. Roof's trial had been delayed for 3 weeks after his lawyers petitioned Judge Richard M. Gergel of Federal District Court in Charleston to declare him incompetent to stand trial. A two-day hearing on that question was closed, but it now seems likely that Mr. Roof's relationship with his legal team broke down over its desire to present evidence related to his mental state. On Friday, having studied a court-ordered psychiatric evaluation, Judge Gergel ruled that Mr. Roof was competent. The standard for competency is low under federal law, merely a determination that the defendant is not suffering from a mental defect that renders him unable to assist in his defense or understand the consequences of the case. On Monday, as jury selection was about to begin, Mr. Roof, dressed in prison stripes, asked the judge for permission to serve as his own lawyer. According to a report in the Charleston newspaper The Post and Courier, Judge Gergel advised Mr. Roof against doing so, citing the expertise of a legal team led by the noted capital defense lawyer David I. Brook. But having found Mr. Roof competent, he said the defendant had the right to self-representation under the Sixth Amendment. I do find the defendant has the personal capacity to self-representation, Judge Gergel said. I continue to believe it is strategically unwise, but it is a decision you have the right to make. The newspaper reported that Mr. Roof smiled slightly as he returned to the defense table, where Mr. Brook moved over to give Mr. Roof his seat. Mr. Brook and other members of his team will now serve as advisory standby counsel. Judge Gergel, the prosecutors, and Mr. Roof then began the process of winnowing a pool of 512 people down to 12 jurors and 6 alternates by asking about their views on the death penalty and their exposure to pretrial publicity. Mr. Roof did not often participate, according to courtroom observers, commenting on only a couple of potential jurors. Jury selection is expected to last several weeks. Mr. Roof, 22, stands accused of killing the church's pastor, 3 other ministers and 5 stalwarts of the congregation at a Bible study session in the Fellowship Hall on June 17, 2015. The gunman sat with the group for close to an hour before removing a Glock pistol from his fanny pack and opening fire while making racist comments. 2 women and a child in the Bible study survived, as did the pastor's wife and their younger daughter, who were hiding in his adjacent office. Mr. Roof was captured the next day in North Carolina. It is uncommon but not unprecedented for capital defendants to represent themselves, and they typically do not fare well. Major Nidal Malik Hassan was sentenced to death in 2013 for killing 13 people and wounding or shooting at 32 others in a 2009 rampage at Fort Hood, Texas. As his own attorney, he did not call witnesses or offer testimony, and confessed in an opening statement by explaining that he had switched sides in what he saw as an American war against Islam. In 2015, Frazier Glenn Miller Jr. received the death penalty for killing 3 people at 2 Jewish centers in Kansas the previous year. Mr. Miller, who had a history of making anti-Semitic remarks, represented himself and shouted Heil Hitler in court after being sentenced. Although New York did not have a death penalty at the time, Colin Ferguson fired his lawyers, William M. Kunstler and Ronald L. Cuby, and represented himself in his 1995 trial for a killing rampage in a Long Island Railroad car. He received 6 consecutive life sentences. Scott Panity, a Navy veteran found to be schizophrenic, was sentenced to die in Texas for murdering the parents of his second wife in 1992 after a trial in which he represented himself while wearing a purple cowboy suit and attempted to subpoena witnesses including Jesus Christ and John F. Kennedy. Death penalty experts said capital defendants at times chose to represent themselves to keep out evidence of their mental or emotional conditions, even though such evidence may provide the best chance to save their lives. In Mr. Roof's case, said John Bloom, a death penalty authority at Cornell Law School, his desire to keep his mental capacity under wraps has really jeopardized the jury's ability to make an accurate assessment of his moral culpability. However, the decision could provide Mr. Roof with an unobstructed forum for his white supremacist views. Key issues never get raised because the defendant knows nothing about the law, said Robert Dunham, the executive director of the Death Penalty Information Center. And often with mentally ill defendants whose murders were a product of their mental illness, they will attempt to justify their conduct instead of presenting evidence that their mental illness makes them less culpable. The judge's decision is likely to make Mr. Roof's trial even more traumatic for survivors and family members. When an emotionally disturbed defendant is permitted to cross-examine those witnesses and ask questions that may be based on a delusional view of reality, it only makes things worse, Mr. Dunham said.
Well, that's the latest on Dylan Roof. Be interesting trial to attend, but I doubt whether they could get in. They'll probably have every seat filled with a black person. So, but if you're down that way and you can, that would be an interesting trial. Well, this guy that was wielding a machete over there at Ohio State, the alleged attacker, Abdul Razak Al-Artan, was killed by police, but not before driving a car into a group of people and then attacking victims with a butcher knife. But I don't believe it was a butcher knife, said Monica Malls, public safety director at Ohio State. Famous but incompetent agents had joined the local police in investigating the incident. What's not too much to investigate? 11 people were injured. All are expected to live. Artan was born in Somalia and living in the United States as a legal permanent resident. Thank our State Department, those war criminals in the State Department. Bound and determined to commit genocide on the white race simply by flooding the country. Yeah. They get all upset, too, when they go to a central spot and collect. They don't want them collecting. They want to spread them all over the place. Investigators discovered a message he posted on Facebook page before the attack in which he expressed anger about the treatment of Muslims around the world, according to reports from multiple news outlets citing unidentified law enforcement officials. Well, someone should remind this guy that most of the barbarity and terrorism committed around the world against Muslims is done by Muslims. I mean, give me a break. He should have found some Muslims, I guess. Artan was enrolled at the Columbia State Community College from the fall semester of 2014 through the summer semester of 2016, according to the college spokesman. He graduated with an Associate of Arts degree in the spring of 2016, then took a non-credit class for summer 2016. He has no record of behavioral or disciplinary issues during his time at Columbia State and graduated with honors, Krauss added. Well, so what, going after a few people with a machete when you can get a arts degree? Come on. Let me see here. What else does it say? Ohio State Police Chief Craig Stone said that Artaun was alone during the attack and the police were still trying to determine the motive for the attack. He hates white people. He hates, and then after that, he hates Americans. Ohio State, because they're picking on Muslims around the world. Well, I would say they are picking on them over there in the Middle East, dropping hundreds of bombs on all these people. Ohio State, I think if I was a Muslim and was from one of those countries where my parents and family and all those people are being killed by all kinds of nasty weapons, I might just get upset too. I know if it happened here, I would be very upset, said the quick action of Alan Haruko, who fatally shot. It looks like a non-white shot him, prevented more people from being injured in the incident. Quote, "We can prove to you that the suspect was by himself in the vehicle and committed this act by himself today," unquote, Stone said. Quote, "It's an ongoing investigation to determine motive and if anyone else was involved in this act," unquote. Well, there you go. There's a terrorist, man. They got his ass, his black ass. Ever think about getting around this N-word stuff? Well, why don't we say I'm anti-African-American? I'm anti-African-American. Don't say nigger. Don't say this other stuff. What do you think? Well, some of you may have caught wind of the gathering by Richard B. Spencer. I don't know where this guy coming from. Neo-Nazi National Policy Institute in Washington last Saturday. They conferred at the Ronald Reagan Building and dined at Mangio's Little Italy. Plans were discussed for making America a white ethno-state. Why not just a white state? Nazi salutes were given. They got a picture, big picture here on this news thing. Jews were attacked. Well, what would a party like that be worth if they didn't say something about the Jews? They partied like it was 1933. On Monday, Maggio's apologized for hosting the dinner and said it would donate $10,000 proceeds to the ADL. Same day, Trump transition team spokesman Byron Lanza criticized the critics. President-elect Trump has continued to denounce racism of any kind, and he was elected because he will be the leader for every American, no matter what their color. To think otherwise is to be complete misrepresentation of the movement that the United Americans from all backgrounds. Can the right wing ever do anything right? Can they really? They just do what seems fun to them. They'll do things that play right into the enemy's hands every time. And they're still so infected with that damn Hitler worship. And we got to, I remember I went through this in 30, 40 years ago. Every time you go to a meeting, and it was so cute to give a Sieg Heil and all that kind of stuff. But what did it get us? What did we get out of it? Reliving the Third Reich and all that kind of stuff. Well, the Spencer's doing the same thing that failed years ago, you know. I assume he's a fairly intelligent guy, but he got $10,000 that guy would have never given the ADL if he didn't want to get out of the crap. And this got in the news, and so and then he's like blackmailed by the ADL. So the right wing gets the ADL $10,000. Oh, man. What are we going to do with these people? And they're all riding on the shirt tails of Trump, who's He's a money man. He don't give a shit about race unless it's his own family. Now, he may care about something there. He don't want no Negroid attacking and raping his family. Trump was on the internet saying, I had no idea this was Bannon's crowd from Breitbart News. He's fired. I wonder if he does. Right wing just doesn't know how to be sneaky. They stick their chin out and say, hit me, every time they get a chance. Here's a earth-shaking, terrible thing that's happened. Dateline Los Angeles. Hateful letters sent anonymously to three mosques in California with a warning that President-elect Donald Trump would cleanse the United States of Muslims have stirred fears among congregants, a community leader said. Hassam Ailush, executive director of Los Angeles chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, said on Saturday that the letters were identical and were postmarked as being sent from Santa Clarita, just north of Los Angeles. Ailush said his group is considering asking the Federal Bureau of Integration to look into the letters, which he believes were sent to other mosques aside from the three that received them earlier this week. More playing into the hands of the enemy. More playing into the hands of the enemy. All the white liberals will send them, and most of the conservatives will send them money to those mosques. We're with you, brother. We're not like those dirty white guys. Well, I see Trump has appointed Miss Chow, Mitch McConnell's wife, that doesn't seem to want to even go by her real name or her husband's name, I think, to Secretary of Transportation, a chink. So if you want to know whether Trump believes in race mixing, right there's a good example. How long is it going to take you to wake up? Well, Kellyanne Conway, who works for Trump, his spokesman, fires back after a talk show reports that President-elect is furious over her crusade against Mitt Romney. I give her a lot of credit for that. You don't want that silly son of a bitch in there. Well, old Breitbart Steve Bannon allegedly told a colleague restricting African Americans from voting was not such a bad thing. A former colleague of incoming White House chief strategist Steve Bannon said in an interview over the weekend that Bannon once told her that the idea of excluding Negro Americans from voting is not such a bad thing. Julia Jones, who worked with Bannon as a business person, I guess. Well, that's why you can't hardly say anything to anybody. It'll come back and bite you in the ass. But I thank Bannon for telling the truth. They should be, of course. African Americans should be banned from white society voting. They should have their own political elector situation where they have their own leaders and like that. Totally separate. That's what I want. The following is a reading from the Liberty Bell magazine of May 1984, and this was by one of the greatest intellects that we ever had, was Revelo P. Oliver. He's commenting on the destruction and the suicide of South Africa. In December issue of Liberty Bell, I commented on the astounding behavior of the Aryans in South Africa, of whom a majority approved of the new constitution by which they will knowingly follow their kinsmen in Rhodesia into the abyss. Writing soon after the results of the election became known, I suggested that the behavior of Aryans might be caused by some epidemic or endemic disease that could be compared to kuru, which eats away at the brain. Since then, quite a few cuttings from the South African newspapers came to hand. The English language press, which is said to be entirely owned by Jews, was naturally filled with obscene rejoicing. its hireling editors discovered demands here and overseas for the government to move more rapidly toward the liquidation of the Aryans by implementing the need to come to terms with black political, economic, and social aspirations, and yelled for the immediate scrapping of the Mixed Marriage Act, which still inhibits large-scale breeding of diseased and mindless mongrels filled with a justified hatred of the race that is responsible for their schizophrenic existence. And with the putrid venom of Yahweh's master race, the editors described as a dwindling band of tattered scarecrows, the one-third of the voters who voted against the suicide of their race and oppose what is right, the scarecrows must be suppressed, of course. But some editors magnanimously propose that they be forgiven if they promptly repent of their sin in entertaining the vile notion that the white race is fit to live. All this, I need not say, was only what was to be expected from a race that celebrates Purim each year and gloats over the glorious butchery of Aryans described in one of their favorite fictions. The newspapers published in Afrikaans were little better, although many of them are said to be still owned by white men. Rapport squeaked about the deceit of the pious talk of the far-right leaders who didn't want South Africa to go the way of Rhodesia and demanded that all whites be educated for the dispensation that lies ahead. The Transvaaler crowed over the triumph of the white conscience of South Africa and the overwhelming rejection of the radicalism that wanted to preserve the nation they inherited from their ancestors. The real gem, however, was excreted by Die Volksblatt on 5 November. That sheet averred that the result of the election had been predetermined by the Creator, but was also the result of prayers of many believers, prayers that are placed in the hearts by the Holy Spirit, unquote. Well, it is just possible to understand that old Yahweh had decreed the liquidation of the Aryans, so he detached a third of himself and sent it to inject ideas into the minds of true believers so they would ask him to do what he was going to do anyway. That is certainly peculiar behavior for a god that sounds like some kind of con game to me. But if that is what happened, how can the pious Christian preen themselves on the moral excellence of what they said when a high-powered ghost had them hypnotized and put words into their mouths? One might as well attribute musical genius to a phonograph that plays a record of Caesar Franck's symphony in D minor, or praise the wit of a ventriloquist dummy. What follows is still more confusing if one isn't a Christian and so tries to understand what is going on. The godly editor of the Die Volksblatt exhorted his readers that since God's will was done, they have to get down humbly on their knees to thank him, not only for doing what he intended to do, but also for having fulfilled the prayers he, as a ghostly hypnotist, made them utter. But now, prithee, can prayers that ask for what was inevitably have been fulfilled, who could imagine that the supplications that had altered the celestial tyrants indeed, or changed anything? Surely they had no effect whatsoever. One wonders furthermore about the psychological explanation of the pious energigunium will do when they are down on their well-calloused knees. Will the Holy Spook continue to plant prayers in their hearts so that he will just use them to think and admire himself? Or if the true believers have recovered possession of their own faculties, will they thank him for what they did when they were out of their minds? Oh, I know, Christians mustn't think. there Jesus ordered them to be like fowls of the air and have bird brains that take no thought for tomorrow or for any other time. But the wicked pagans can't keep their minds off a perfect blank. They have a wicked propensity to be rational and to try to understand the causality of what the Heavenly Father is up to. The Volksblad Sapien editor, for that matter, tries to explain. He tells us that in a few weeks before, when the crops in some parts of South Africa were withering in a disastrous drought, the Christians got down on their hard-working knees and prayed for rain. And then old Yahweh gave them some. Not as much as they needed, and not always in the right places, but still, even though he was grudging and evidently confused by the topography, he did squeeze some sky water out of his clouds for the pets. I admit that was kind of the old duffer, but since nothing happens without God's will, it must follow that the Christian's rain god must have caused the drought in the first place, presumably to distress his true believers and make them yammer in desperation. So what about his morality? Does he take a perverse pleasure in making his darlings suffer? And since everything was predetermined by the Creator, including the drought that had sufficient largesse of sky water, what good did it do the witlings to yammer to their Jesus Pluribus anyway? Well, however that may be, the righteous editor believes that the Christian prayers were as efficacious as the Navajo's rain dances or the magic that the pure-hearted Hopi make with their rattlesnakes, so that it is proof that old Yahweh likewise responded when his Christians prayed for the spirit of tolerance and brotherhood that will make South Africa a hell for white men and women. We are to infer that Yahweh thereupon tampered with the minds of the Aryans in that country and made a majority of them vote for the new constitution. That, at least, was in character, for, as all Christians know, the big Jew in the clouds did tamper with the mind of the of an anonymous Egyptian king so that he would have a pretext for torturing to the limit the innocent Egyptian people for the delectation of his chosen bandits before they stole the Egyptians' portable property and ran away with it. One can understand why Christians' knees shake when they think of their capricious and sadistic God. But what is incomprehensible is the idiotic sentimentality of Christian females who try to cotton up to the ferocious monster by saying, God is love. Perhaps they are trying to placate him, but the editor tells us that everything happens according to God's will, and that the whole course of history has been predetermined by the Creator. Whence it follows that he said the Creator is responsible for every atrocity and every horror in all human history, and stands convicted of responsibility for every crime that has been or will be committed on this planet. Nice God, isn't he? But South Africans realize that now more than ever it is necessary to go down to one's knees, to join hands and look to the future in a spirit of continued humility and reconciliation. Yes, there is an epidemic disease that rots the brains, and it isn't Kuru. Revlo P. Oliver. Great man. Great man. And here's a short one by Jim Taylor. I'm not sure whether he's around anymore. He probably passed on. Called Sweet Charity. I have received a message from Mother Teresa of Calcutta, India. She wants to warn the American people about certain fraudulent practices, including the outright theft of funds, which have been going on in the United States under her name. According to her, Robert Perlman, a New York Jew, has been collecting money nationwide under the fund name of the Foundation of Tribute to Mother Teresa. The good sister said that none of the funds collected were ever sent for her use in alleviating poverty in India or anywhere else. She claims that Mr. Perlman is stealing money for his own use. She declared he and others are making use of our poverty to enrich themselves. Well, that's what most of Christianity does. Sister Teresa said that she had asked the Attorney General of the state of New York to stop the unauthorized use of her name by a bunch of thieves. Her complaint filed in the state court states that the foundation in question uses mail solicitation and offers gifts in exchange for contributions. Mr. Perlman's foundation issued a statement that they fully intended to send the money to Mother Teresa, but just hadn't gotten around to it yet because they were so busy. I guess this means they forgot to do so. Don't envy Mother Teresa in her legal battle in New York. Her chances of getting a fraud conviction in that state are next to nil. Well, later we found out that Sister Teresa wasn't pure in her heart either. There's some books out on it. Okay, well, you can do a million things under the cover of religion. No matter what religion it is, some of the worst thieves in the world gravitate to churches, whether it be Islam, Judah, or any of the others, even the Indians, the American Indians, so-called Indians. but that just shows you how easy it is to make fools out of white people. Very easy. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Wotan's Day. Yeah, Wotan's Day. David Lane's favorite day. Just remember, I have nothing to say. President Trump is may come after us more than Obama did, because he's going to be wanting to prove he's not racist. The right wing is forcing him to yap about it all the time, that he's not racist, when his whole background had a lot of racism in it. See you later.
Bye.